Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNEA Technical Council Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNEA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snea.org/podcast. You are listening to STC Podcast Episode 53. Today we hear from Patrick Boyd, Principal Systems Management Engineer from Dell, as he presents Introduction and Overview of Redfish from the 2016 Storage Developer Conference.
My name is Patrick Boyd. I'm with Dell, or Dell Technologies, I suppose now. I'm here to give you an introduction and overview of Redfish. Last year at this conference, a colleague of mine from the DMTF, Jeff Hillen from HPE, came up and talked about this thing called Redfish that was in development, probably included how it was going to cure cancer, solve world hunger. We haven't quite gotten around to those things yet, but I am here to show you what it does do today and kind of how it does it. No further ado. I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of overview of who is developing this thing, what is it, give you some very simple examples, talk about why we chose the technology we chose to do this. I'm going to give you some slightly more complex examples, go over how you actually use this thing, discover what resources you have on it, and then actually, even show you a complex creation example, which I haven't actually seen written down before. All right, so who is behind Redfish? As you can see, the promoter companies, supporting companies, pretty much if you buy server hardware, chances are you're interacting with some or multiple of these people at some stage. Either their stuff is inside the servers you're buying, or they're actually making the servers you're buying. So chances are you're going to see Redfish at some point here in the near future. Additionally, we're working with the Open Compute Project to do their remote management profile of servers is going to be supported by Redfish. Working with the UEFI consortium to supplement their firmware update mechanism and to also allow discovery of does this system have Redfish from a local perspective, so you can talk to a local host interface on Redfish. We're working with SNEA, collaborating on storage. There's going to be a lot of sessions on that later on in the week, presented by Rochelle. And then we're also starting to work with the Green Group to deal with power and cooling. We already deal with power and cooling of individual servers. This is more dealing with power and cooling of entire data centers. So how do we actually scale this thing up to provide the level of data that the Green Group uses to do that sort of thing? So that's what we're trying to do here. All right, what is Redfish? It's an industry standard API for IT infrastructure. We chose HTTPS, and we transport JSON over that using an OASIS standard called OData version 4. It's basically designed to be usable by apps, GUIs, or scripts. It's not required. You don't need to write a whole bunch of C code or code to do this. You can just script it from the command line, and it will work. It's also Schema-backed, but human-readable. In other words, you don't have to go, okay, what does bit 4 in this mask mean again? We're actually going to spell that out in a nice string, say this is exactly what these things are. No bit masks, none of that kind of stuff. First off, Redfish is mostly focused on servers. Its first release was a secure multi-node capable replacement for IPMI over LAN. We basically took the IPMI feature set we felt was still relevant, ported it to HTTPS with REST. Now we started to add devices to cover customer use cases and technology. For example, this last year we've added direct attached storage, we've added PCIe and SAS switching, we've added non-volatile DIMMs, we're adding multifunction adapters, aka complex NICs that are not necessarily just NICs, FCOE, iSCSI offload, etc. We're also starting to focus on composability. How do I carve up systems to make larger systems? And then, again, as I alluded to earlier, we're trying to meet OCP, the Open Compute Project's remote machine management requirements, so that people can use this to manage their machines remotely from the Open Compute Project. We also intend to expand the scope of this over time to the rest of the IT infrastructure. So I alluded to, we're working with SNIA to cover more advanced storage. Rochelle has a couple of presentations later on in the conference for an overview of Swordfish and then a deep dive of Swordfish. We're working on, with partners like the Green Grid to cover power and computing. And then we're also going to work to expand and accommodate existing network switch models and standards into Redfish. So you're actually going to, theoretically, all your IT infrastructure managed the same way. All right, real simple example. Basically, I have some Python code here where you basically put it at the URI, open it, you get back JSON, you parse the JSON, you read out the serial number out of the array, print that out, and there's the serial number. Three lines of code, I've got a serial number on a server. Okay, that's kind of useful, right? I'm more of a command line guy, so I also have a command line example where all I have to do is call curl, here's the URI, I'm passing it to a JSON parser that's available for the Linux command line called JQ, just so I get just the serial number instead of the entire payload. So, pretty simple. Not a whole lot to this. So, why do we choose HTTPS, REST, JSON, etc.? So, HTTPS, obviously, you guys are all familiar with. It's well understood by admins, known security model, known network configurations. You guys know how to secure this thing. Your DevOps people know how to secure this thing. All, pretty much anyone knows how to deal with HTTPS through the firewall, etc. REST, it's pretty much replaced SOAP, which is what we were mostly using for systems management before this. It's a little bit easier, a little lighter weight. You can use standard tools like curl that I just showed you. You don't have to have a whole lot of extra infrastructure to call SOAP calls. Now REST is pretty simple. JSON we chose because, again, human readable, but it's simpler than XML, but still has large cross-language support. So basically, we look at it as the combination of large cross-platform support plus the ubiquity of tools to deal with REST, HTTP, JSON allow us to make this use the same tools that are already being used in IT management elsewhere. For example, if they can call a Google API, a Twitter API, an AWS API, they can also call Redfish. Very, very similar concepts. So, slightly more complex example that actually does something. But this is about as simple as you can be on an API. I'm going to blink a light on a server. So basically, I need to go find this server somewhere in the data center. I'm going to blink its little Cyclops LED. So what we do is in Redfish, we called that the indicator LED. And I need to set that to blinking. So what I'm doing is first I create a little file called led.json that has a very simple JSON in it that says indicator LED to blinking. That's all I set. Then I call curl, tell it to patch, pass it the file, pass it login information. One thing Redfish does support is it supports both basic authentication and session authentication. So if you don't want to go through the complex ordeal of setting up a session for just simple something like this, you can just pass your credentials on the command line and do basic auth. Set it to the URI that I need to blink, and lo and behold, the LED will start blinking. We also try to keep the same paradigm alive as much as possible. So if you need to blink a disk drive, whether it be a hard drive, SSD, whatever, same exact thing, except you notice it's a different URI. It's essentially a different resource that we're telling to blink now. Other than that, the file to do it looks exactly the same.
So would you recommend HTTPS, so you're sending a password?
Yes. Redfish basically says that anyone that's implementing shall implement HTTPS. So they're required to by the standard. If they want to also implement HTTP, they are allowed. But for security reasons, obviously, I'd want to use HTTPS pretty much all the time is me. But again, if you're confident your network's secure, et cetera, you could do HTTP. You could do session-based auth over HTTP to abstract out your credentials a little bit. That is totally allowable. But again, we typically stick with HTTPS mostly because more secure.
Is this served by the VMC or by some software on the server?
So either way, the question was, is this the BMC or some software on the server? In essence, Redfish could be in any of those things. It can be a management controller inside the server itself, firmware. It can be software running on a host. Doesn't really matter what this is. There are ways to discover that, which I'm going to go into a little bit here in a minute, that basically you discover that something's Redfish capable. Doesn't matter if it's software, firmware, whatever. It's a Redfish endpoint that you can talk to. And I'm going to go over that here so that we can actually talk about how you can actually, once you've discovered a Redfish endpoint, figure out what this is and what it's doing. So the only, let me take a real quick step back. There are a couple of actual ways to figure out this thing has Redfish. One is being told it has Redfish. Second is we have a SSDP mechanism, simple discovery protocol. It's similar to UPnP, right? You plug this thing in, it announces the world, hey, I've got Redfish. The new one is our new host interface, where if you boot up, there should be UEFI variables and SMBIOS tables you're gonna be able to read that basically say, hey, here's how you can go to the local copy of Redfish through, that the BMC is exposing or whatever, that actually says, hey, here's my copy of Redfish. Once you know something has Redfish, there's only one URI that is absolute set in stone, and that's /redfish. When you get /redfish, you'll get contents back that looks something like this. Very simple JSON. Right now, we only have a version 1. So it'll say version 1 is at this URI. It's not necessarily at /redfish/v1. Most people have done it that way for simplicity's sake, but you really can't make that assumption. The standard doesn't allow you to make that assumption. So it could be at /foo. So you really need to, you make that one call, you figure out where the service root is. So in this case, it indicates that the service root is at /redfish/v1. Once you have that, you can obtain that URI. You get back what we call the service root document. Service root document looks something like this. For the most part, if something says at OData in front of it, you can mostly ignore it. That means it's OData metadata. I'm going to go into why we did OData a little bit. Suffice to say, there's some standardized tools that can just handle OData things when you point them at it. Like there's even a plugin for Excel now. You can actually say, here, Excel, read this OData endpoint, and it will do that. So for the most part, don't worry too much about the at OData stuff. Everything in Redfish has an ID and a name. The ID is basically a unique descriptor in this collection. The name is more human readable. In this case, not very interesting because it's just the root service. The Redfish version is the version of the Redfish spec this service is compliant to. So 104 is our latest. And the UUID uniquely identifies this Redfish service. So for example, if I have multiple IP addresses that happen to point to the same Redfish service, they're both going to spit out the same UUID, so I know I'm looking at the same Redfish endpoint. These other things are collections, which I'm going to go into on the next slide. So basically, the service root can also contain a whole bunch of what we call root-level entities for a Redfish service. Currently, these are systems, which are basically all your application servers this thing manages. If it's a simple BMC, it's probably only going to be exposing one of those things. If it's a chassis controller for a blade chassis, it might be exposing one for every single chassis in the blade. Or it could be even doing multi-chassis management, exposing one for every single system that you've connected to. If it's some kind of Redfish aggregator or some other service running on a host, who knows how many nodes it could be reporting, right? So I mean, it's really, again, we try to make sure this thing scales all the way down to BMC, all the way up to something like a data center management software. Chassis are all the actual raw sheet metal chassis that are in the system. Again, that could be as many as one, could be as many as thousands. Managers, these are more the things that are actually doing Redfish usually. There are also provisions for modeling things like just a simple fan controller. So these are things that are actually doing management of your hardware. A task management service, basically list out long-running tasks. Session service, again, if you're trying to do session management, logging in using sessions, you use that. There's an account service to provision new accounts. Event service to subscribe to events. If you're used to SIM, this is what in SIM is called alert indications. Registries are basically a set of message registries. What we've done here is we've actually allowed for a Redfish service to point at localized files. These might be hosted locally, they might be hosted elsewhere. But basically saying, here's where you can go get localization type information or more extended information about error messages, etc. So these are just registries of that sort. There's a set of JSON schemas. OData has its own set of schemas called CSDL. We also produce JSON schema. Both are normative, both are allowed, both are supposed to be equivalent. So basically, if you're more comfortable one way or the other, you can do that. If you never want to look at a schema, you can probably muddle through. That's part of the point of this. Lately, we also have now added fabrics, which are some very simple fabrics like PCIe and SAS that allow for some very basic setup of how those fabrics work. And then finally, an update service to do firmware update.
Patrick?
Yes.
There's one missing from this, which we'll cover in more detail in the Swordfish deep dive, but you will actually see it when you look at the DFTF Redfish service, and that is the extension placeholder for storage system.
Yes, I did not want to steal your thunder.
But it actually does show up when you go see the Redfish service.
Okay. Yes. Again, we have allowed for extensions to this, and one thing that is going to happen is Swordfish is adding a few elements to this, which is SNIA's extensions on top of Redfish. I wasn't trying to steal Rochelle's thunder, so I left them out. And as Rochelle pointed out, yes, they are there, and yes, they are part of the DMTF standard. DMTF and Redfish have worked very closely together to make this seamless from a user point of view. Where Swordfish begins and where Redfish begins, a typical user of this API really is not going to be able to tell. It's going to be pretty nice. So.
Question. What do you mean by fabrics?
Okay, like I said, this is very simple fabric solution. What we currently support is PCIe and SAS. There are talks in SNIA to add a few elements to this, to add fiber channel. It's going to be a very, very basic fabric model to deal with a SAS fabric, a PCIe fabric, maybe a fiber channel fabric. We're probably not going to get off into Ethernet fabrics. They're a little bit more complex. So there's probably going to be a different model for those somewhere. But yeah.
What kind of information is it? I mean, is it some box which is outside the server or storage and is telling you fabric information? Fabric over here, or what is meant by fabric here? Is it something inside the server?
So mostly what it's meant to do is it's got three kind of elements inside it. It's got endpoints, zones, and switches. Switches, I think, go without saying, are the actual things doing the switching. There could be one of those in a fabric, or there could be many, right? Endpoints are the things that you can actually route and make visible. And the zone is the collection of things that are visible to each other. So in other words, you basically say, I have these 10 endpoints that I want to be able to have endpoint 1, see endpoint 2. You create a zone with endpoint 1 and endpoint 2 in it. That's it. It's a very, very simplistic model of fabric, not necessarily anything that is strictly inside the box or outside the box right now. Again, it was originally designed for PCIe and SAS switching, both of which can be inside the box or outside the box. Those were kind of our initial guidance. We worked with SNIA and basically said, hey, does this model in basic ways support fiber channel? And they said, yeah, there are a few things we need to add. We said, great, we can go out with this then. And so that's kind of the Redfish model at work, is let's start get something stood up, does it break anything in the future? Cool, it doesn't. All right, we can ship. And then we can add things in the future that we know other technologies are coming. So.
And what we can say is that network, Ethernet switching and networking is also going to come in here at this level.
Yes.
There's a whole rack of stuff coming on that.
Yes, exactly.
Ethernet networking to this as well. Ethernet IP network.
Yes, it's just not currently in Fabric.
It's not in Fabric.
It probably will not be in Fabric. Okay. But yeah, so.
There'll be a different Ethernet.
Yes.
Ethernet networks.
Yes.
And as you ask questions, you get Redfish.
All right. So now each of these entities that I just talked about can contain more entity types underneath it. So for example, a computer system, which is under the systems element from the service root, can contain processors, Ethernet interfaces, simple storage, log services, and storage. Theoretically, other things as well. Simple storage was the initial kind of release of, hey, here's HBA level storage. Every single thing you see is a physical device. We kind of looked at that and said, well, we need to support more complex storage topologies as well, so we added storage, which is a bit more allowing for volumes and drives and not have a one-to-one relationship anymore. Processors are obviously your CPUs. Ethernet interfaces are your network controllers. Log services are, you know, what logs your system has. For example, your system may have an OS log, may have a cell log, may have some other type of chassis-tied lifecycle log. So these are all examples of log services that might be exposed on a system. All right. So let's take an example again. So we want to discover every single drive that a Redfish service is modeling. So first, we would go get the service root, which I already showed you. Next thing we would need to do is we need to get everything under systems. So we just do a get on systems. And you're going to get back something that looks like this. This is what we call a collection or entity in Redfish. The important things to look at are the members count and the members. Most of the rest of this is just metadata. So metadata, the members count tells you how many members you have, because this could be paged. One of the things Redfish allows for is if I have 5,000 of these things, I might not want to get all 5,000 at once, or the service may not be able to return all 5,000 at once. So it may say, here's 100, and there's more. And there's ways to go page through that. And so the members array is the actual entities that we're looking at. So in this case, this is probably a simple BMC. It's modeling one system. So now we need to get that one system. So the previous page showed us the systems URI was Redfish V1 system/1. So we get that. And we want the storage node. We want to know what storage URI for this guy is. So that comes back with Redfish V1 systems 1 storage. So in these examples, and quite often the URIs are simply the name of the node added at the end of the URI. Again, that's not required. So you can't make that assumption. You can't just assume it's slash storage. It could be slash foo. So that's why we have to go through these steps. So now we need to know how many different storage entities are available on this computer system. So we do a get on storage. And now, in this case, we get back 2. For this example, I have a simple onboard SATA and a RAID card. Those are modeled separately because they are basically separate storage domains, right? If I have a RAID card and an onboard SATA chip, they're accessing different drives, producing different volumes. They're not really interacting with each other. So they are both produced separately. So now I could go through each storage entity and then determine the URI for drives, each drive, and then go get a get on each drive. But that's pretty tedious. So I'm going to show you, one of the tricks that Redfish allows is this little thing right here where it says $expand equals drives. What that does is that says expand out this one field. In other words, hey, service, go do all these tedious gets for me. And so basically what that has done is it's actually, instead of me having, you know, normally right here there'd be an at OData ID, colon, and a URI. And there'd just be a list of those. And I have to go get each one of those individually. What this has done instead is actually put the data here in the payload for me. So now I see the ID, the name, the indicator LED, the model, the revision, the capacity in bytes, and a whole bunch of other fields. And I just put a dot, 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 so I wasn't like, you know, overwhelming you with the 8 million fields we have for drive. And then the next one, and the next one, and the next one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, until I'm out of drives. So, yes?
How stable is the enumeration of things that there are multiple copies of? If you ask for a list of drives and then somebody pulls a drive out or adds it to a drive, does that scoop the later drives down in the list so that you're not really quite sure what you're accessing?
So the question is, how stable is the enumeration of drives, or any entity for that matter? In the case of drives, it's actually very stable because the way we modeled an empty slot is an absent drive. There's actually a state field in these things, and basically all we do is say, hey, that's an absent drive. So that's actually how we modeled drive slots. In other cases, yeah, if you know, I'm modeling multiple systems, let's say it's a blade chassis, for example, and I didn't choose to model the empty slots as absent chassis, or systems, obviously I don't know how many systems are gone because that one slot is empty, right? Then yeah, it could change after I did a get and someone yanks this thing. However, we would send, if you were subscribed to the event service, we would send you an event saying, hey, these things changed, and actually give you the URIs of the relevant thing that's changed is actually in the events. And so that way you're able to actually tell what changed. So that is, the hope for things that aren't stable. You'll be able to go, oh, okay, this thing just changed. I need to go get more data if I'm, for example, writing a, data center management console that needs to know how many systems I have that are currently up. A system goes down and can't be talked to, well, then that one, might disappear, but hey, I'm going to get an event about it. All right. So, I've shown you how to blink a light, how to get a field. Those are kind of nice, but let's do something a little bit more complicated. I'm going to create a volume, aka virtual disk, logical disk. So, what I'm doing here is again setting up a file. In this case, we need to provide at least three things, or actually we only really need to provide two things to the Redfish service to have it create a volume. I'm also providing the name. You don't necessarily have to provide that. I need to tell you how big the volume is, and I need to tell you what type of volume I want created. So in this case, I'm doing a 1 TB volume, and I'm saying it's a mirrored volume. Putting that in a file. I don't necessarily have to do this file step, by the way, on curl. It just makes the command line a little cleaner, because if I put all this stuff inside the quotes here, it'd be really confusing. So I could actually do this in one single line of command line if I wanted to. And so basically what you do is you post. That's our create operation. Pass in the volume we want posted. Again, the login information. And what I'm doing here is you'll see that storage RAID volumes. Volume is a collection of volumes. So when you create something in a collection is you post to the root of the collection. So, there might be a volume/1, volume/2, volume/3 for the three volumes I may already have, but in order to create a new one, I have to post to the root of the collection. Once I do that, I just created a volume, name test drive, the size of 1 TB, utilizing mirror for redundancy. It is probably relevant to point out at this point that depending on how long the operation takes, you may get a success back immediately, or you may get a task. We talked about the task service earlier. I don't actually have an example of that in here, but basically you may get a handle back that basically says, hey, we're working on it. And there are ways in the API to tell that. So that's most of what I have. I have a few backup slides for a few more complicated examples if anyone wants, or if we have any more questions.
Can I ask a way to step back?
Sure.
Question. So you said the user, potential user of this is the data center manager, console manager, the person who is trying to look at what's the current state of a data center in terms of what equipment is there, what's there in each of those systems in the data center. What do they use currently today, and how that changes with Redfish? So what do they have? What's their stack, software stack, and their way of managing the data center today, and what does that look like with Redfish before and after?
Okay. So the question is, what do if the use case here is data center management, what does that look like currently, and how does Redfish change that? First off, that is a use case of this API. It is not the use case of this API. Today, they use a combination of IPMI, SMIS or SIM, and essentially homegrown tools / vendor proprietary means. Most data center management tools I know of usually know how to crawl inside the OS's inside Windows through WMI, inside VMware through some VMware specific APIs, that some of which are now actually RESTful, etc. The way Redfish changes all that is essentially takes what we thought was good out of IPMI and SMIS, makes it in one pane of glass that's a little simpler to access. You don't have to understand what profiles are there, et cetera. The idea within SMIS, you don't have to go, okay, this is a Dell server, we need to call this IPMI command. This is an HP server, we have to call this IPMI command, because IPMI wasn't quite implemented exactly the same across the board in some cases. There's actually a whole bunch of things in IPMI tool that go and handle that. If I was going and trying writing code from scratch, I'd have to basically replicate all that. There are a few places where it's just not the same. And in these cases, we have a very clean model for adding OEM extensions on top of Redfish that IPMI really didn't have as well. It just reserved commands, but unfortunately, it didn't have a good way of reserving parameters to commands. And that was part of the problem with IPMI. With SMIS, again, there were a few of the same kind of compatibility issues. And then, honestly, it's not quite as client-focused. Neither is IPMI. For example, if I wanted to get a picture of all my thermal data in my data center, for IPMI, I'd have to go look at sensors and figure out which are my thermal sensors, and then also go look at this fan table over here that's different from the sensor table, and kind of put this picture together. Similar thing for SMIS, I'd have to go enumerate many different objects. On Redfish, I basically say chassis/thermal. Here's all my thermal data.
And that's all assuming you're talking to the standard APIs as opposed to everyone's proprietary APIs.
Yes.
A lot of people have hunted working with standard APIs because trying to hint, if you're a DevOps guy, you wouldn't work directly with SMIS because the learning curve on that is really high.
Yes.
So you'll probably end up going and working with each vendor's proprietary REST API or proprietary command line API or something like that, and doing exactly the same kind of things that Patrick's just describing. So that's where a lot of this stuff comes in for both Redfish and Swordfish is, can we give them tools that they're used to that they can plug in, because they're already working with a lot of RESTful and Python and standard API or standard tools. Can we come in and can we give them things that work well with the tools that they
have? Patrick can make process.
Yeah.
It was just curious, the mapping is already existing, and that would just make it.
Yes. No, again, absolutely exists, but we think this is a lot cleaner and a lot easier for people to deal with, especially just the DevOps guy that may not really be a great computer programmer. He can use command line tools. He can Google on I'm blanking on the name. You can just Google the question, and there'll probably be an answer there on how to call a REST API, how to deal with SOAP, how to deal with IPMI. That's a lot more specific, and honestly, it's a lot more subjective on this system, this system, this system. You're going to get different answers. Redfish, you'll get basically the same answer. So.
Thank you.
Part
of the answer there would be a question, please.
Uh-huh.
Talking about my marriage.
Yes.
So, you very quick mirror copy of the drive and know something.
Mm-hmm.
Created, but there could be a
There could be multiple memory
Yes.
How do you know which one to choose? And do you have the option to define the table? It's to define it before you call that function. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Okay. So the question is, you know, in this case, I said volume type mirrored. How do I know what the mirroring strategy is, et cetera? The focus for Redfish is more what than how. In this case, the guy wanted his data mirrored. He doesn't necessarily care how. If I wanted to, you know, control that on a more granular level, what I would do is I would probably add OEM extensions, or if we found there was an industry-wide case for this mirror strategy, then we would add that as a separate field, or we'd add it as an OEM field. Essentially, the desire here is, here's the basic. And if I want to add more bells and whistles and more knobs, we can do that later as well. So as far as what the mirroring strategy is, et cetera, most part the thought is, user wanted a mirrored volume. So.
Also recognize that a lot of this is focused exclusively on the local storage. These are servers and local attached storage. So when we're talking about more complex storage configurations, that's when we're going to go to the Swordfish parts. So
yes.
We can talk about the more complex storage configurations and how we do that when we go into the Swordfish talks. So from the Swordfish talks.
Exactly. So, yeah, this is DMTF standard, so this is very focused on local systems, you know, the server itself. It's not quite as focused on SANs or NASs, et cetera. So if you're interested more in that, then, you know, absolutely go to Rochelle's talk on how SNIA is built on top of Redfish. Yes?
So if you have a fairly complex system, you try to enumerate for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at a tree structure so that as you go down it, you keep going down it, and once you've walked all the tree, you've enumerated your whole system? Or are you looking at a network where you have to be aware that, well, this server might be hooked to this switch, and this server is also hooked? So you've got a graph, and you have to kind of keep track of everything you visit as you go through to enumerate the system.
So the question is, on a complex system, are we dealing with more a tree structure or a graph? It is probably more of a graph because, you know, as I called out earlier on the, you know, all the things at the root, there are definitely links across those. For example, the system is more, you know, it's actually kind of a combination of tree and graph, actually, now that I think about it. So for example, system is kind of the logical view, right? I can have physical systems, I can have virtual systems. Chassis are kind of the physical view. Here's the actual sheet metal. Here's the power supply, the power domain inside that, the fan, the thermal domain inside that. Here's managers, which might be the BMC, might be a fan controller, might be some piece of software running an OS. And so there are links between all these things. The chassis tells me what systems are in it. The systems tell me what chassis they're in. The managers tell me what chassis they're in and what chassis they're managing. The chassis tell me what managers are managing them and what, so everything's linked everywhere else. And one of the things we did very specifically is everything's contained at one place. And what I mean is if I do some crazy stuff with the expand operation, I basically can't end up with multiple copies of the same object. I'll end up with references instead. That way, if I'm just writing a client that's doing some kind of crazy get that's going to try and get everything in one go, I'm getting references so I can reconstruct all those pointers, but I'm not ending up with 50 copies of the same object. So, or entity, sorry, so that I'm getting confused.
Would you say that discovery is more tree-oriented, but when you get into the details, you're actually going to mesh? Right?
Correct. Absolutely. When you're initially discovering these things, it is definitely more of a tree operation. You start at the top and basically do either breadth-first or depth-first search, depending on what you're looking for, if you're just trying to obtain everything. Once you actually start getting into it, you're going to start seeing all these interlinks and how everything's connected, so you do know all this data on how is this thing connected, so you can do things like isolate failure domains, see how things are connected in a fabric, et cetera. So.
Yeah, and remember that when you go discover multiple distinct management touch points, those may be connected up to each other on the back-end network or fabric or whatever, and those you have to do your graph and cross-reference. So there are IDs in here that can hard cross-reference, right? So to build the network graph, you have to use that method to enumerate under a given management touch point all the systems and so on there. It's a cross-reference tree or a cross-index tree. So you descend the tree, but there are links to other things in there. And there are some models where things are effectively enumerated twice. And when you do the networking stuff, start introducing those things. If you look at the way gang models are done and whatnot, oftentimes you'll go down and go, oh, here are all my ports. And then you'll go, oh, but I have a virtual network device that has those ports again. So the box has a bunch of ports or interfaces. And then this virtual site has a bunch of interfaces, or this VLAN has a bunch of interfaces. And so if you think about it, you're traversing, you've got to do two different things if you want to manage an entire data center. The beauty of this is if you get all the devices obeying the same APIs for the common facilities, thermal power, cooling, chassis, then, and even some of the OS stuff, that's a huge advantage because you don't have to switch protocols or anything, and you get all the information in the same way.
And another thing that we actually did just, you know, that we got from SNIA, they called it they called it durable name in their SMIS profiles. We now call it identifiers. And essentially it's a worldwide or a, you know, depends on the exact circumstances, universally or, you know, system unique ID at least, that you can use to correlate these volumes and et cetera across different systems. So if I am discovering, you know, if let's say I had a BMC implementing Redfish over here and I had a big storage array implementing Swordfish over here, they're both going to produce a volume entity. They're both going to have a durable name or an identifier that's the same. So I actually go, okay, I'm crawling this and crawling this, this volume and this volume are the same volume. That's how this guy is talking, you know, he's reading data off this array over here. So that's one thing that we have. So that, you know, that's an example of the collaboration that SNIA has brought to this that has helped us be a better standard. So.
Is there compliance testing also done for that? Is there Redfish compliance testing done for the people who are building the systems supporting Redfish?
So the thing we're actually doing differently for Redfish is we're open sourcing the compliance tools. So all the tools that basically say, hey, is this Redfish service compliant with the standard, are all open source. They're going to be in a GitHub repository called Redfish Tools. And basically it's going to allow customers to run their own tests and wrap their own tests around this. So that's kind of our thought on this, is to empower the customers to do the, you know, figure out their own interop testing. You know, there's not going to be some kind of DMTF standard test that basically says, yep, DMTF step approval, you're a Redfish. We don't have that on purpose. So.
Maybe I missed that question. Did you get a question on how you fit in vis-a-vis Yang and Netconf and, you know, their configuration and orchestration models, and where do you fit in the ecosystem? Forgive my lack of
No, so the question that I was answering was basically what does the compliance testing model look like for Redfish? As far as how do we fit into Yang, et cetera, I would suggest you talk to Joe. He's actually working on that exact problem right now, is, you know, how do we model, you know, take the Yang models and basically create an equivalent Redfish model out of them.
The idea for Ethernet networking switches is to take the Yang model, translate it into the underlying schema language of OData, which it then gives you a JSON Redfish compliant API to talk to your network switch using ITF, OpenConfig, IEEE models. Okay. Plus, proprietary is easy, vendor extensions are easy, because that's just a Yang again. And so we have a spec that's just got its work in progress number, that's just out now, on how to translate Yang to something called CSDL, which is Common Schema Definition Language, which underlies Redfish. But then there's a tool to take that schema output and translate it to JSON schema, like JSON schema or JSON schema, not just any old JSON schema. And then you take that, and that's your JSON, that'll tell you your JSON messages. So effectively, you just send JSON messages, but there's all this back-end structure to help you organize everything. And if you want to take advantage and you provide the metadata service, you can get all these XML files that tell you how all the data is organized and all the annotations and just a ton of information on the structure of the data. It's type, it's enumeration, it's limits, it's this, it's that. Yang has that, as you well know. And so we map everything to Yang, every single thing into Yang, into something in CSDL such that it could be with Redfish. If you go back to your overall list of all the models, there. So we're going to put something called network devices at exactly the same level, and you can enumerate as many network devices as you want. So if you have a chassis, you can do the chassis itself, you can do its line cards, all as separate network devices. If you had a network, an Ethernet fabric, you could do that as a touch point for the fabric level control, plus one for each of the network devices. If you had a stack switch, it'll work. If you have just a single switch, it's pretty easy. And then whatever Yang models that the networking vendor wants to use. And then we'll be working on some canonical models for some various deployment scenarios and things like that. That's about to start. And that all came out of work from something called the Chinook Consortium, which was a few companies that put together that initial thing. Does that make more sense?
Can you please introduce yourself so that we can...
I'm Joseph White, so I'm a distinguished engineer with Dell.
Joseph White.
W-H-I-T.
W-H-I-T, yeah,
Joseph White. Yeah, so he's part of the, what are we calling it, the Ethernet subcommittee?
Yeah, the Ethernet Task Force. I think it's Ethernet Task Force is our official name, but
yeah.
Myself and a gentleman named John Lund, who's a long-term DMTF, SPMF guy, are co-chairs for this.
And John works at Intel.
And John's from Intel.
Yeah. So all that work is happening, again, under the auspices of the SPMF, which is the group that does Redfish. So this is going to be in the Redfish standard as well. So.
And so all of our, so again, our document, the initial set of documents, which is just the translation, is being made public. So if you have interest or knowledge in what would make a good canonical model, or how to reconcile with the routing working group's overall structural model that they're working on, just split into three at the last ITF meeting, or anything like that. And I think you can just join. I think if you're on any of the member supporting companies, which is just about everyone in existence, who would care about this? You can come participate and join. And we have lots of ideas. We've gone down three or four blind alleys already, and that provided us a lot of context and information. So there's a lot of stuff there. So if you are?
I'm an entrepreneur.
Okay.
Founded a couple of companies.
Oh, sweet. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. What's Swordfish versus Redfish correlation again?
Okay. So.
But I didn't really catch it.
So again, Rochelle's going to go more into this in her talks. Redfish is focused on local servers. You know, basically it's focused on servers. And then Swordfish is focused on storage. So it's more what does a, RBOD or large array of storage look like? You're going to go to the Swordfish model for that. What does a server in BMC look like? You're going to go to the Redfish model for that. However, there's a lot of overlap. For example, they're both contained in sheet metal. They both have power supplies, both have fans, both have temperature sensors. So we're trying to leverage things as much as possible.
I'm confused. I thought Redfish was expanding its scope to do the switches, fabrics, and storage.
It covers local storage. So come to a talk on Wednesday morning and Wednesday afternoon, both of them, and we'll go into detail on all of those.
The simplest answer you're going to get is Swordfish is an extension of Redfish.
Yes.
Exactly. Swordfish leverages all the infrastructure that this brings into focus.
Everything on here, plus.
And it will be compatible with.
It brings in complex storage.
DMTF and SNIA are actually working in conjunction. So, okay, which is good and interesting.
Say, but what I'm
sorry. I said, so Swordfish will be not compatible with, it's part of Redfish. It's just being run out of SNIA. Because SNIA has the storage management initiatives and came up with SMIS many years ago, which had success in a few areas for the SIM model. And this is sort of the up, Swordfish is the update. I was stealing all your stuff. But
yeah, well,
so it's all going to play nice together. It's all going to be part of one unified superstructure. Shared storage, remote storage, logical partitioning of remote storage, all that complicated good stuff is all in Swordfish. Core server management and system management is solidly in Redfish.
And Redfish defines all the protocols?
And what type of them was?
Hyperconverged would be dead center
with
use some of everything.
So, you know, again,
disposable systems use some of everything.
From a user's perspective, there is no difference. They really should not see it. Really, the biggest difference here is where it's developed. DMTF develops Redfish, SNIA develops Swordfish. From a user perspective, it looks the same.
Yeah.
They hit the system endpoint. They don't really know that it's running Redfish or running Swordfish. It's going to say /Redfish because we're going to say /Redfish. Whether it's implementing a whole bunch of these entities that are defined by SNIA or a whole bunch of these entities that are defined by Redfish, it's probably going to end up being a mix of the two, probably regardless.
It really helps us accelerate the development because the SNIA can go off and focus on defining the storage pieces in parallel.
Yeah.
I was looking for a big kind of thing to look forward to here too. Here is that Redfish plus Swordfish plus what he's doing leads to a unified management approach for most of the stuff you'll find in a data center. So finally, you can have software that can depend on a standard being in place where it can reach into different domains and actually do something meaningful for automation.
Yeah.
That's the real game.
Yes.
And they keep saying the word composability. They mean if you just have a wall of processors, some networks, and a bunch of storage, you could actually construct logical systems out of this, right? You might need a 5-processor, something that has that storage over there. You can construct that with a single management station. So that's the end game, but right now we're talking about, you know, pulling, Patrick's telling us about pulling the infrastructure stuff together. It started with server management. And what Rochelle and the Twigger and the SNIA people are doing is adding the complex storage to it. And what he's venturing off into now under SPMF will actually pull the Ethernet parts into the game. So you actually have a unified approach for the manager of server storage and all the batteries. And we don't throw out anything that exists now under ITF, IEEE, and open configurators.
Yeah.
Because the models that all those groups have put forward already for how you organize network switches, you can't just throw that out. There's vast amounts of good information and so on. You just need to find out how to plug it into all of this so that you get unification, which is what we're have done the first step of. There are a few steps, but we've done the first step. We proposed the first step. The first step has to get ratified, but it's a pretty good attempt on the first step. We're most of the way there on the first step, which is translation and incorporation.
All right, we're about out of time. Any other questions?
Can Rochelle point us to some documentation on storage?
Absolutely. Go to snia.org/swordfish.
Just, you know, also look at your handy little...
Yeah. And go to the keynote at 10 o'clock on...
This is SMI.
Wednesday, overview of Swordfish.
Sorry.
And 3 p.m. and
sure
deep dive on Swordfish Wednesday as well.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
If you need more incentive, there will be a giveaway of drone. You know, like Phantom
3, I can
tell you from personal experience, it's really fun. So,
thank you.
Thanks, for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snia.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit storagedeveloper.org.